Hi there, and welcome to the Skylight Books author reading series. If you'd like to learn more about us and our many upcoming author events, please visit skylightbooks.com, where you can browse our inventory, buy books, and join our Friends with Benefits Club. You can also follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook. To speak to a real live bookseller, please call 323-660-1175. Thanks for your support, and enjoy.
I can't emphasize enough how little I had to do with the book, Fudge. I had nothing to do with the writing of the book. I know Dan Klein and Kelly Hudson and Arthur Meyer not very well from the comedy world. I've socialized with them a few times. I've been to your house once, and it was pretty late at night after I'd been at a pop-up steakhouse.
He'd been drinking quite a bit.
Yeah, and that's it. I remember meeting Kelly probably in about 2007 at the Brooklyn Lyceum.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Dan Klein sort of by reputation, and Arthur Meyer had a sketch show that I thought was pretty good. And it's really my delight to be here today with you and your book. This was my intro that I was going to say to bring Kelly out. Kelly Hudson, everyone. Thank you. So we're going to start with talking about the book Fudds.
Mm-hmm.
Fudds is a complete encyclopedia, and it's written by the Mizrehi brothers.
Yes. The Mizrehi brothers were required to hire ghostwriters.
Mm-hmm.
The Mizrehi brothers, who are the chefs behind the Fudds restaurant, don't know what they're doing. They're very stupid. I've never actually met them in person, but they had to hire me, Dan, and Arthur to ghostwrite the book. You'll see our names very tiny at the bottom of the book.
So let's talk about the book, and let's talk about the Mizrehi brothers.
Sure.
So when did the Mizrehi brothers meet?
The Mizrehi brothers met when they were born. They were actually born at the exact same time. That's right, folks. It was a tie. Same time, exact same times. Heads just shoving out at the same time. And some people would call them twins.
I was going to ask.
I didn't ever think of it that way until now. But they might be twins.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So what kind of dishes do the Mizrehi brothers serve when they first opened the Fudds restaurant that you based this book on?
Well, when they first opened the restaurant, there were only three items on the menu because they were just starting out. There was milk, bread, and ketchup on the menu, and that did pretty good. And then they just built from there and then built the empire you see here.
They extended out. Okay. What makes the Mizrehi brothers so special as chefs?
Well, unlike a lot of other chefs, the Mizrehi brothers only care about money. They care about making money, and that's why they put the book out. And for instance, in one of the recipes you'll find in the book, all they say is just go to Boston Market and buy a meal there. And, you know, this is what we had to work with as the ghostwriters.
Now it's time for the questions asked a lot portion of the interview. So these are all questions that are...
have been asked a lot.
That have been asked a lot.
We couldn't think of a way to abbreviate that.
Some of these questions are answered in the book. Where does food come from?
Stores.
Is food good?
You know, that's a tricky one. For the most part, food is good. But, you know, I hate black olives, and there's some dipshits out there that love them, though. So, I guess food is good.
Why does food get thrown away?
Well, I think what you're referring to is trash. Trash gets thrown away. It's two different things.
What is the best food?
I think I'd have to say it's Eggs Benedict wrapped in gold. That is the best food in the world.
How much food is there?
So much. There's so much food, it's like you can barely measure it.
Is there enough food for everyone?
What do you mean?
Is there enough food for everyone who needs to eat?
Can you just rephrase it a little? I don't really get what you're trying to say, Neil.
Most people need to eat a few times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Is there enough food for everyone to do that? Everyone in the world eats, and there's only so much food. Is there enough food for everyone in the world to eat all the food that they need to eat every day, forever?
This wasn't one of the questions we agreed on.
We're going to table that one.
Know what to say.
Am I food?
Yes, I'm sorry, you are.
When can you get food?
Food is put on sale every day at 8 a.m. You can go get it at most stores.
Who has the most food?
The king.
What is the most food that someone can have?
I'd say about a whole turkey with stuffing and mashed potatoes.
Mm.
Maybe a few green beans.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
How much does food cost?
usually like $5 to $10.
I'm glad to see this one is on here. Is it okay to fill up on bread?
Yes, it is okay. And I actually recommend it. It's a funny joke to play on a waiter. If you fill up on bread and then they bring you your food that you ordered, you can just be like, I'm full, thanks. Which I like to do a lot at a restaurant. It's fun.
What should you say when you want food?
Please, mommy, gimme.
Is a banana a food?
No.
That's all the questions.
Great.
Now we're going to move on to do...
we're going to pass out some photos.
We're going to pass out
some pictures.
Photos of food just for you to look at, touch.
If you want to just take one and pass it down, there's not enough for everyone because I was printing these out at the library. But.
These are pictures of food, all different types.
You'll find casserole, broccoli, apples, among others. Just a few of my favorites. Just so you know what we're talking about, get you in the mood. All right. And this next segment...
We're going to do excerpts from the book.
Yeah.
We're going to do readings.
Yeah. We have a few parts bookmarked here.
Yeah, I can't emphasize enough how little either Kelly or I want to do the reading. So after a reading, if anyone else wants to read,
I'm going to read this first one. But if anyone else wants to do it after that, because we don't want to do any more after that. Does anyone want to? Okay, we'll wait.
Let's start with one from Kelly.
Okay.
This is page 27.
Yeah. What's in our spice rack? Grass and bush rippings. Essence of t-shirt plant. Peppy grunts. Pine cloud. Mippies. Mini mips. Miplets. Mule root. Dried apple anuses. Really old gourd water. Non-colored pust powder. Broccoli pox. 12-inch pizza. Pure evil extract. Acne dust. Pig stool granules. Palm chins. Barbara Seed. Terry. Horsey Hoof and Horn. And Cundy.
A round of applause.
Joe, would anyone
would
like
anyone
to read?
Else like to read the next bookmark?
Safety in the Kitchen. Come on up. Give it up.
You can have mine.
Sit over there.
Okay. Sit over there.
What was your name?
Maggie.
All right, Maggie. I'd like you to read Safety in the Kitchen.
Okay.
It's this page, this page.
Oh wow.
This page, this page.
Okay.
It's not a lot. It looks like a lot. It's not a lot.
Safety in the kitchen. Safety in the kitchen should always be the chef's number 6 priority. Next to having fun, number 1. Making food, 2. Making noises with pots and pans, 3. Stinking up the house, 4. And breaking a good thick sweat, 5. The key to safety in the kitchen is patience and gracefulness. At the very least, clumsy chefs will often lose a finger during a vigorous cooking sesh. They could die, too. At any moment, anyone could die. Here are some tips to avoid death in the kitchen. Here's some tips to avoid death in the kitchen. You're on your own in other places. Here's an image of a chef with preparing to avoid death, looks like. And it says, always pad your body and hands with old pillows. Wash hands in a large bucket of standing water with the other members of the kitchen staff. The good germs from everyone's hands will neutralize the bad germs. And now here's an image of a power strip in a wall with many cords. Always check that electrical equipment is plugged into outlets and not into some random holes in the wall and floors. Those are most likely snake holes. If you hear any kind of beeping, stop what you are doing and leave the kitchen at once. Never come back. grease yourself and the floors up with lard so you can move around quicker. If someone in the kitchen is holding a knife, take it away from them and stab them first. Remember, in any kitchen, it's you versus everyone. Never let children into a kitchen. They may have a gun. If you have to cough or sneeze, do it on the food. You don't want to get any germs on your hands. To avoid a fire, hose down all electrical outlets and equipment. Get them good and wet, because water puts out fire. Wear tight, sexy clothing in the kitchen at all times. Firemen always save the sexiest people first. Turn off the lights while you are cooking so you don't forget to turn them off later. And there's an image of a mustachioed male person in a bra and garter belt and holding a whisk sexily. And on this page, there's an image of someone with bare feet with clippings around their feet. No socks or shoes in the kitchen. Cook as fast and as hard as you can, and to leave less time for something to go wrong. Watch out, there's something right behind you. Actually, there's not, but you gotta have that attitude about this stuff. And then the last thing it says is, did you know, in 1991, a truck carrying Tostitas chips crashed into a truck carrying Chi-Chi's salsa. 3 people were killed.
Thank you,
Maggie.
I'm going to read one, and then
we'll see what
if somebody else wants to, maybe you can.
We'll see what happens.
Foods and their babies. When two foods love each other, they form a special bond and have sex with each other. This results in a baby. No one has actually ever seen where and how food has sex, but we've definitely seen baby carrots, so it must be true. When running a restaurant, it's important to know whether you want an adult or a baby version of the food in a meal. Here are some different foods and their babies. Aren't they cute? There's an asterisk after the previous sentence, and the footnote is, not sure if this has set in yet, but just stop fantasizing about your own damn restaurant. It's sort of ridiculous that you'd buy this book and then stab us in the back by starting your own place. We need this restaurant more than you do. Cut it out. Here are the foods and their babies. Carrot. Baby carrot. Corn. Baby corn. Swiss cheese. Baby Swiss cheese. Hot dog. Cocktail weenie. Hamburger. Slider. Cake. Cupcake. Bagel. Mini bagel. Donuts. Hostess donuts. Jumbo shrimp. Popcorn shrimp. Large bucket of popcorn. Small bag of popcorn. Steak. Piece of steak. King size Snickers. Fun size Snickers. Food. Baby food. Back ribs. Baby back ribs. Slim Jim. Baby meat stick. Bread. Crumbs. Squash. Cannot reproduce. Did you know? Most women like to be looked at while eating.
Right, ladies?
Should I continue?
Sure.
Okay.
To the next bookmark? Or?
Yeah. Chef's Nook.
Get in there.
William Shakespeare, widely referred to as the loser of all chefs, William Shakespeare was one of the most notorious failures of the 1500s. After he was invited to cook for the king and queen and subsequently mocked for his grotesque ham and biscuits, Shakespeare hurled his apron at a knight and claimed he would show the world his true talents, then ran off sobbing. No one heard from him ever again. A round of applause, please. Would anyone like to volunteer to read the next section, How to Find a Competent Garbage Man? Kelly will do it.
Okay. Give me that. Oh, there we go. All right. How to Find a Competent Garbage Man. This segment was included because our recipe, Dead Dog, co-plated with yam clippings and a leafy sage dumping, includes needing to employ a garbage man. And you need a competent one, trust me. Okay. Number one, set up an audition. Visit your local casting website and check off the box that says garbage men. Number two, set up a time for the garbage men to arrive at your house. 3 o'clock p.m. always works great for us. Number three, during each audition, have garbage men improvise different funny trash situations. Whoever makes you laugh the most is the funniest garbage man. Number four, do not pick the funniest garbage man. Number five, pick the most competent garbage man. You got to remember that, guys. All right, and that's that one. Thank you. We have a new segment called Fermentations, which is, you know, the alcohol end of things. There's a lot of really cool wines and all that. Would anyone like to read our wine list? I'll read it. You want me to read it? You want me to read it? Okay, I read it. Fermentations. Throughout history, wine, or as we prefer to call it, fermentations, has always been the beverage of choice for everyone from the ancient Greek gods to modern single female alcoholics. The following wines pair perfectly with nearly all of our recipes, not because of the flavors or textures or anything, but because if you drink enough, you'll be drunk and the food will taste really good. 1996 Blonde Corsage. A buxom, curvaceous wine, popular to drink if you're crying in the bathroom. Pairs well with old Polaroids of your college boyfriend, Brandon. 1988 Dodge Caravan. A rusty, bumpy wine. Good for getting drunk and driving a car. 1972 Ambrogino. Coarse and filthy. This grape is the basis of wines from the Monte Calvo region of Campania, Italy, a region known for its sodomy and knife violence. 2003 Arrabbiata. A parched, desiccated, bone-dry red wine that's so dry that even the Sahara Desert was like, damn, that's some dry-ass wine. Okay, it's a direct quote. 2001 Big Time Crabby. Apple wine made from nasty crab apples found on the ground in a cider mill. A nose tickle of hay rides, rotten pumpkins, and feet. Nose tickle. 2013 Barrel Water. Combining the essences of tap water and the insides of old dirty wine barrels, one will taste hints of hydrogen, oxygen, and old dirty barrels. 1978 Pinot Succo. A white wine with a balanced taste. Its tropical aromas and round, light feel make it ideal for sensitizing the palate before a meal, even though it's just a fucking bottle of wine. 1997 Breakfast Wine. This refreshing citrusy wine boasts a 25% ABV, pairs well with Honey Nut Cheerios and brushing your teeth. 1995 Sauvignon Le Blanc. A broad white wine made by star of the popular sitcom Friends, Matt LeBlanc. Its goofy aroma and slapsticky flavor make it perfect for getting together with friends and ordering a pizza. 2008, sometimes it's hard to describe what a wine tastes like. It's good though. You'll like it. Whatever. 1997 Vintage Port. This putrid dessert port was accidentally aged 3 years in a casket instead of a cask. When they asked us to age the port, we thought they said casket, and we were so confused. We were like, why would they ask us to age it in a casket? Aren't dead people put in caskets? But we weren't sure if we'd get in trouble for asking, so we just went ahead and aged it in a casket. So yeah, it was aged in a casket. It's really awful. It was a used casket. 2016 Monster Energy Wine. Hints of taurine and inositol deliver the big bad buzz that only Monster Energy Wine can give you. Tear into a bottle of one of the meanest energy wine brews you'll find. 1973 Broadway Wine. This overpriced, mediocre wine is served during intermissions at Broadway musicals. Great for loosening up the audience member who is annoyed with Nathan Lane's performance. 2010 Greg Shapiro Private Selection, Malbec. Made by local winemaker Greg Shapiro, this blend of traditional Bordeaux varietals tastes exactly like Greg Shapiro. You'd have to know Greg Shapiro to understand, but still, it's weird and impressive. Highly recommended. 2006 Kindergarten Kids Wine. A playful white wine with shy flavors and a sticky aftermath. Perfect for kids. They hate the taste of it, but once they drink enough, they start acting really funny. 1999 Rainbow Life Riesling. This Riesling is a blend of everything in the world. It displays a spicy acidity balanced with notes of rocks and sand and tacos and bananas and crickets and dust and earwax and lily pads and grapefruit and honey pucks and hockey pucks and paper and brick and aged cheddar and old film strips and cake and armor and textbooks and factories and social injustice and cigars and skin and hair and TV and leather jackets and paper and floppy disks and femininity and burlap.
1988 Trevor Marks wine. This little shit of a red wine will try to kiss you with a skinny, weak tongue and will undo your bra with shaky, wet fingers. Notes of sweat, underwear, and white bread. 2001 A Space Odyssey. Not a wine, but an incredible movie.
All right.
Round of applause.
One last segment here. This is our shorthand system that we use, or they use at the Fudd's restaurant. You've all heard of, like, 86 it, 86 this. If you've worked in a restaurant, there's lots of abbreves. So things move pretty quickly at restaurants. In fact, things move so quickly sometimes that we don't even know if they really happened. One night, after working an 8-hour shift, Alfredo said that he didn't remember anything. Brain aneurysm? But if you want to serve people swiftly and efficiently, you've got to have a shorthand system. Here's ours. 86. Currently out of a specific item. Example, 86 the cornbread. We lost it all.
We lost it.
15. Too many onions. Someone must go back to the kitchen to eat some onions. Example, 15. Get back in the kitchen. It's a 15. You know, the onion code thing. You got to eat some. Okay? 11. 11 of something. Example, we have 11 side dishes. CR, cooked ruined. Example, how would you like your cheeseburger? CR, please. CCR, if the surviving members of Creedence Clearwater Revival are eating at your table. Example, the still alive members of CCR would each like a glass of clear water? EOTS, everything on the side. Example, I'll have a Cobb salad, EOTS. 3F, form the food into a face. Example, I'll have scrambled eggs and sausage, and can you 3F the food? Thanks. CTBP, cut into baby pieces so I can feel like I'm a baby. Example, I'll have the hot dog, CTBP. VMTR, chicken. Example, I'll have the chicken. VMTR? What? Sand. That means sandwich. Example, I'd like to order one plate. Sand? No sand. No sandwich. Example, I would like the lasagna, no sand. And here we've got a little quote from the Bible. Man shall not live on chips and salsa alone. Those are for when you're waiting for your Mexican food. Matthew 4:4. From the New Testament. All right, those are all our readings. I guess all we have left is a little bit of audience participation trivia questions.
This is a trivia game. We're going to ask trivia questions and then immediately tell you the answer. So if you knew it, keep track of it in your own mind.
And we're going to do this off the honor system, right?
It's an honor system. So at the end, if you won,
then we have a couple prizes for you.
Yeah. You can stand up in the end and say, I am a winner. if you got more.
Cool.
Okay.
I'll just do the first one, I guess.
Okay.
In what country was food invented? Everybody got your answer in your head? Don't say it. Russia.
Is some food brown? Absolutely not. That's disgusting.
What is the name of the book we were talking about today?
Fudds.
What little green thing goes ribbit and lives on a lily pad? It's a frog, but we will accept any answer.
How many fingers? This is kind of a riddle. How many fingers does a 5-year-old boy have on his right hand?
On his right hand.
He has 5 because he's 5 years old. You get that?
What direction is north? North.
This last question we want everyone to answer aloud. And we're going to do a count of three. After we ask the question, we'll count to three and everybody do it. What sound does an eel make?
One, two, three.
That was great, guys. But you were all incorrect. Thank you. All right.
Did anyone win?
No one got any of the questions right?
Did anyone win?
I got fuds right.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well,
okay, you get a prize.
You get a prize, which is this book that came from my home. It's been sitting on my coffee table for 3 weeks.
Did anyone else win?
We have a few more prizes back here.
Did anyone else win? Did anyone else win? You won, ma'am.
Okay.
Okay, it's a slice of pie from House of Pies. Did anyone else win?
You won? All right.
That's two.
And there's one more piece of
pie. Did anyone else win?
Did anyone else win?
Thank you. Congratulations.
Oh, I have one more thing. It's 10 pesos.
Did anyone win that? Did anyone come in last? Okay. Great.
Thanks, guys. So I guess we'll open up the floor.
We're going to open up the floor for 2 minutes of questions.
Do I have a fork on me? No. I'm so sorry.
You can go back to House of Pies.
Yeah, it's like a block that way. It's across the street.
Show them the slice of pie, and there's a
That's
you can fill out a
purchase.
Form.
And they'll send you a fork in 2 weeks. Any other questions about the book or anything? And it can be serious questions. I'm a real person. I did write this book, co-author. It's my first book, so... Yes, sir.
What's the process? There's you, Dan, and Arthur. Did each person have a different section?
When it came down to the editing process, when we had to do the work really quickly and go over the whole thing over and over and over again, we did split up the work, and I did the last third of it every time, so the last third is especially Kellified, I guess. But the rest of the work... We did all together, and it was over the course of a few years, because obviously we had full-time jobs. Arthur is a writer at Jimmy Fallon, which is, you know, The Tonight Show. So that takes a lot of time up for him. Dan is also a writer, and I am too. So we we had a lot of work to do. So we would go on these weekend retreats to... This is when we still lived in New York, upstate New York. We'd get like an Airbnb and just spend all day writing and all night partying. Because we're all very good friends, and it was so great. Dan and Arthur made out one night. Yeah, Arthur made him. Dan hated it. He's completely hetero. Yes.
Is it hard being a female writer?
It's been really fun, actually, being a female writer. It wasn't hard at all. And thank you for asking me that question, because now that you've asked that, that makes me, like, a legitimate female writer to be asked that question. Every girl gets asked that question. But no, it's been really, really fun. Dan and Arthur worked together on a sketch team for years before I even met them, so they definitely had their own little... thing going on, but it was so much fun. They're the most ridiculous people ever, and also very hardworking. So it was really great working with them. They're men. Megan?
What's your favorite stupid joke in the book?
Favorite stupid joke? Crap. I can't think of it. Oh! this one comes up in my brain a lot. There's a chapter in the book that's for children only,
And there's a part where you can color in. There's like a coloring book part. And all the items are white, so that you can't do any coloring. And it's kind of mean to kids. I mean, not that any kids are really... I don't know if they'll actually be using this. They probably shouldn't, because there's a lot of curse words and allusions to sexual activity. But yeah, that's my favorite. Is like, one of them is just a snowy ground, a piece of white paper, white bread, a white plate, like just cheese, white cheese. That's my favorite. Yes, sir.
Who designed the illustrations on top of that one?
These two boys who I never met. So what happens when you publish a book, this is like info for, you know, whoever's out there trying to get published. And so you write the book, and then the publishing company, this isn't always how it happens, but it's the most efficient for sure. We had two designers assigned to us who were incredible. And then we had an illustrator as well. And I can't remember their names right now. They're inside the book, obviously, but it's... And one of them contacted me on Instagram. He was like, hey, I designed this. I'm like, oh my God. Hello, sir. Thank you. And he lives in Philadelphia, and I guess I'll get to meet him someday. But they did such a good job. It was insane. Like, we saw the, like, you know, preview stuff of it, and I couldn't have predicted how great the final would have turned out. It's gorgeous. Yars? Mooks?
I saw you did some promotion with Mario Batali. I was wondering how much you were willing to participate in this.
Oh my God. Well, if he wasn't willing, we never would have gotten him. He's like a super laid-back, cool guy, and we kind of threw it out there to have Mario Batali do the foreword as a joke, because he's just the first name we thought of, and then we sort of aimed a little lower, and all those idiots declined, so... And then Mario Batali was like, sure! And we were like, okay, do you want to write it? Or we can write it, and you can look over it and approve it. And he was like, you write it, hand it over, I'll jack around with it. Jack around is his exact words. And we gave it to him, and a week or two later, we just heard from his assistant, Mario loves it. And if you read the foreword, it's like not... Like, he's portrayed as kind of an asshole in a funny way, in a lovable way. But he's like, I'm Mario fucking Batali. That's right. Little red ponytail, Crocs. Like, and it's really great. And he loved that. And then we got to meet him and record like a little promo for it, which you can see on the Bloomsbury YouTube page that I edited, and he just like did it in two takes and was like, woo, great, good times, bye, and then like tweeted about it or retweeted about it, and that's about it. And I think Arthur, my co-author, might get to go on The Chew, which he co-hosts, so watch out for that. So yeah, Mario Batali has been a dear, wonderful man the whole time. Oren, did you have something?
Yeah. Was there a particular restaurant or menu that sparked the idea?
Not the spark that sparked it was me and Dan trying to impress each other and make each other laugh. And we would just text each other back and forth like little ridiculous descriptions of food. And then we started a Google Doc and blah, 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 blah. But living in Brooklyn for 8 years and then making enough money at some point to finally go to those cute little restaurants, that's definitely behind it, for sure. Like, this is like the only example I can ever think of for some reason, but I went to Brucey for my birthday once. It's this place in Carroll Gardens in Brooklyn, and they had something on the menu called brick chicken, which like is such a violent, abrasive, like gross thing to think about. You just imagine the brick has just been on a building for years and like covered in dirt. And I don't know, I like that idea, because a lot of the descriptions are like a little violent sounding, so we kind of took that and ran. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming, and I will sign books if you'd like, and I love you.
Thank you for coming.
You've been listening to the Skylight Books author reading series. Don't forget, you can listen to this and all our other great podcasts at skylightbooks.com. Thanks again for stopping by, and we hope to see you soon.